Food. It's a fine conversation. It's one or some a fine topic for conversation. We have whole television channels devoted to food, which I actually enjoy watching, which is such a peculiar thing that you watch somebody else make food that not only you can't eat, you can't even touch. It just seems sort of odd. But we still do. And food is one of those things that comes up fairly often. And it comes up in one of our readings today. Paul writing to the church at Corinth talks quite a lot about food. But really, it's not about food. Then he talks about idols. Talks about what idols were and what they might be used for. But this passage isn't really about idols either, which is good, because if it was about food and idols, it would really have nothing to say to us. I was reading a commentator who said, when it comes to 1 Corinthians 8, the first thing you think of is what could possibly be less relevant to a sort of a current, to a modern congregation than food offered to idols. And of course, it is what it is. It's completely irrelevant. We don't have idols. We don't offer food to idols. So why is it there, and why are we talking about it? Because it's not so much the food and the idols. It's what Paul is talking about that still connects with us and still has significant value for us to consider. And that's where the sermon title comes from, that love builds up. And love builds up no matter what and no matter who. Paul is pretty clear about that, and Scripture overall is pretty clear about that. That love is one of those things that transcends a lot of our other concerns. And for a particular kind of person, where this really hits us is that being a loving person is more important than being right. It doesn't mean that we go out of our way to be wrong. But when our primary concern is to be right, to be correct, it's very easy to be a non-loving person. And what we can end up being is right and wrong at the same time. And I'm well aware of that possibility because I've lived it for a good portion of my life. I'm hoping I'm less likely to do it now than I was when I was younger. But for a long time, it was really important for me to be right. And in the same way that what Paul is talking about here, is people who are wanting to do what's right. These aren't people who are taking sort of simplistic views or just doing whatever comes most easily. Paul's talking about people who are trying to do what's right. And the image he uses, which is difficult for us perhaps to wrap our head around, is food offered to idols. And so what the problem was in Corinth was that when you went to the market and bought meat, you may or may not know where it came from. And one of the things that was a hallmark of religious practice of that time was offering animals in sacrifice. Well, if you don't take the animal and burn it to nothing, to ash, what do you do with it? Well, sometimes the priests ate it. And frequently it ended up in the marketplace. But I don't know about you, but I can't tell where a steak came from, other than it came from a cow. I don't think anybody can. And so there were some people who were really concerned that they might end up eating this meat that was offered to an idol without knowing it. They really wanted to do what was right. Because they knew that idols weren't really a thing, but they also knew that they were supposed to leave idols behind. And perhaps they came out of religious practices where this kind of idol worship was really important. And so when they left that behind, they were really worried about that. And as we look at this, Paul is saying that we all understand that idols are nothing. Offer meat to an idol, offer anything to an idol, doesn't matter. But for some people, that's an issue. So what do we do then? Well, if we are really convinced that being right is the most important thing, we will tell these people that they're wrong and they should just eat whatever they want and move on. How helpful is that? Well, it's not helpful at all. Because what you're saying is that somebody's deep-seated feelings about something are irrelevant. What you're telling them is that they're kind of dumb or naive or they're ignorant of the more important things. You're telling them all kinds of things. You're still correct. that the meat offered to an idol is identical to a meat to the meat not offered to an idol. But you're not being helpful. You're not being loving. And that's what Paul spends most of this passage talking about. He's saying that there's a number of things out there that some people struggle with that you might not. And if you want to be a loving person, you need to pay attention to those things. You'll notice in here, nowhere does Paul say that you should tell people when they're wrong that they are correct, because that's not helpful either. But what Paul is saying, there's a bunch of things out there that some people think are important that you may not, and vice versa, of course, that don't really get in the way of our ultimate expression of our love for God. And if that's the case, we need to look at our response to those things and decide what we're going to do in a way that is most loving and that builds people up. Paul knows perfectly well that meat is meat. It doesn't matter. It's a gift from God. Unless you have chosen for some other reason to be a vegetarian, there's never a reason for you to not eat meat. Paul says you can do whatever you want. Paul himself says, I can do whatever I want because I know where this comes from. But what Paul says at the end, in verse 13, as he's talking about this, he says, therefore, if what I eat causes someone else to fall into sin, I will never eat meat again, so that I will not cause that person to fall. So what Paul is telling us in this particular passage is that for those of us who have an understanding of what is most important and understand this, the fact that we know this doesn't mean that we won't at least sometimes have to change our behavior on behalf of other people. Now, the language he uses earlier on is that people, in this translation, that their conscience is weak. Now, what exactly that might mean, weak, strong, is sort of a tricky kind of thing. But what it obviously means is that these people are hyper aware of something that Paul doesn't think is particularly important. But rather than just telling them that they should just, I don't know, brace up and not worry about it, he says, until such time as they have moved to another, to the next level, if you will, where their conscience is less weak, Paul thinks it's his responsibility and ours not to make it weaker, not to destroy their faith, not to blow their conscience out of the water just because we happen to know something. It's why we do things that matter quite often. Not always. There are some things that are simply wrong, and it's just the way it is. The fact that you have a good reason to do so doesn't mean that it's right. But there's this huge pile of behavior in the middle that why we do things matters. And we sometimes think that, well, what we do should be judged on our intentions. And one of the best ways to sum up our difficulties with other people is that we judge other people on their actions and we judge ourselves on our intentions. I run across that every once in a while. And every time I think about it, it hits me again. Because that's what we do. We don't look at why other people are doing things because we can't. We don't know why they're doing them until they tell us. And so when somebody does something, when they drive by us going too fast, we just think, well, that's a terrible person driving too fast through a school zone. Now, if somebody told you that that person was driving someone in the middle of a heart attack to the hospital, would you still think they're a terrible person? Of course not. When we do things that other people might judge as making us terrible people, we always have a reason why. And it's usually a good reason why. But we can't see other people's reasons. And when we find out what other people are thinking, or when we realize that some of our behaviors are making things difficult for other people, the fact that our intentions are good is no longer useful. And in one way, doesn't really mean anything at all. And what Paul is telling us is that if we want to be part of a community, first of all, this community of faith that we're in, and then even the larger community, that it's our responsibility to do everything we can to find out what our behavior does to and for and with other people. Thankfully, we're not called in this passage or any passage to be able, you know, to read minds. We're not called to always know exactly what to do. But what we are called to do is to pay attention to what our actions may be doing to other people. And then see what they're doing to other people. And then it's our responsibility to change our behavior. That's hard for us. Particularly for those of us who have figured out that what we're doing is right. And that being right is important, not just because it makes us feel better because we're right, but because right matters. Because doing the right thing matters no matter who does it. But it's possible to be right and wrong at the same time. The example that I've sometimes heard is answering somebody's question by shouting at them. Answers their question, but they might not hear the answer. If our behavior interferes with somebody else's struggle, it's our responsibility to change our behavior because that's not our struggle. Paul had no difficulty eating meat wherever it came from. I suspect that by this point in Paul's life, if you came and there was no one around for whom this would be a problem and said, "Paul, this steak was offered to, who knows, Zeus," he would say, "Who cares? I'm going to eat it anyway. It looks good. Zeus is nothing. This is a gift from God, no matter what you might think it came from." But Paul knew not everybody was there. And for us, it's not so much food, but there are other behaviors that when we indulge in them, when we engage in them, it makes it difficult for other people. I don't know what those are for you. I don't know what they are for sort of the world in general. But for a lot of people, how we engage online, how we talk about politics, how we talk about the things we value, the jokes we make, are things that we need to be aware of. How many of you have either had a personal experience with it or at least have heard somebody else saying, "I thought that person was religious," or "I thought they were a Christian," until they did whatever that was? Now, I'm not saying that your behavior has to be acceptable to every other human being at all times, because that's not possible. I was listening to a podcast today that said there's a particular group of people that is just waiting to be angry about something. No matter what you say, they'll find some way to be angry about it. So we're not talking about everybody. But we've all had those experiences, either ourselves where we suddenly change what we thought about somebody because of their behavior. We don't want to do that if we can avoid it. Which means paying attention to the people that we're in community with. Our families, here at church, in the larger community, wherever we are. Doing the best we can not to get in the way of what people need to be the best people they can be. And sometimes that means limiting our freedom. Sometimes that means doing things that we wouldn't otherwise. I remember hearing a story, this is long ago, and I have no idea whether it's true or not, but from the sound of it, I suspect it might be. And there was a family who had a hired hand, came in for the harvest. And they were not so much a formal family, but, you know, they ate at the table and they invited the hired hands to eat just because they were gracious, hospitable people. And the child noticed that this hired hand was having a terrible time trying to eat. And he kept dropping things, like food, and he couldn't seem to get it from the plate to his mouth. And then the child noticed his father noticing the hired hand, at which point the father took his jackknife off his belt and ate the rest of the meal with his jackknife. And that was the first time the kid had ever seen anybody eat peas with a knife. Because as soon as the hired hand realized that, oh, he didn't have to use this fork, whatever it was for, but could eat everything with a knife, he was fine. This is not considered good manners in many places, to eat all of your food with a knife. But it's a loving act. It's an act of hospitality that made somebody feel more comfortable and brought them in. Didn't mean everybody else had to eat with a knife. But what it did is someone took a step away from the formality even of a farm table to say that we don't have to always use the right utensils. If part of our purpose is to make people feel comfortable and valued around the table. It's a small example, but most of the things that we do will be small. Hardly any of us have to help somebody understand that idols don't exist anymore. But where are those things for you? And where are they for me? Where I have opportunities to do things differently, to be less dogmatic about what I believe, to be less insistent on being right. When the most important thing is to be a loving person. It's not really much of a choice. I mean, we have a choice. But what it comes down to is that we can act in love or we can no longer act as people who follow Jesus. I thought a while about, should I put it quite that starkly? And I think I do, because I think it's worth paying attention. But Jesus said, love each other. John said, people will know that you follow Jesus because you love each other. Not because you know a lot, not because you're right, not even because of how you dress and where you go on Sunday at 9:15. But how you love each other. Love builds up, and that's what we're called to do. To build up the people around us, to not get in the way of their faith, whether it's weak or strong, whatever it might be. That's what Paul calls us to do. And it's one of the things that we can do. It takes a bit of work. Sometimes we have to ask questions about our behavior. Is this helpful for you? Does this help you? Does it make things worse? But it's worth it. Because when we act in love, we're acting the way Jesus acted to us. And we're acting the way that we've been called to act. Amen.